This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon. You're listening to EN4 News. It's 3:30. I'm Paul Sinclair. Coming up on today's show, former First Minister Alex Salmond appeared in court yesterday, charged with 14 offences, including attempted rape, sexual misconduct and breach of the peace. The Scottish Government will finance a programme to support young people at risk of running away from home. Our correspondent, Emer Harrison, joins us in the studio to explain the benefits of the scheme. But first, Luke Barry has the latest news.
Political strategist Roger Stone, a longtime ally of President Trump, has been arrested in Florida, charged with 7 counts in the Mueller probe. The indictment includes 1 count of obstruction of an official proceeding, 5 counts of false statements and 1 count of witness tampering. The charge is linked to an investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller into alleged Russian interference in a 2016 US presidential election. Mr. Stone will appear in court later in the city of Fort Lauderdale. He denies any wrongdoing. A man convicted of killing his date in a speedboat crash on the River Thames will be held in a Georgian jail for 3 months, a judge has ruled. Jack Shepherd has been hiding in Georgia throughout his trial in the UK for the manslaughter of Charlotte Brown. Mr. Shepherd admitted in court today that he's been feeling suicidal and hasn't stopped thinking about the incident.
Not a single day passes when I do not think about the loss of Charlotte's life. Sometime after the accident, I felt suicidally depressed at what happened. That's why I've been unable to speak about it.
Chancellor Philip Hammond has rejected claims that the deadline for Theresa May's Brexit deal should be delayed. Mr. Hammond said the impending Brexit deadline is a ticking clock that will focus minds in order for the Prime Minister to get the deal passed in time. The Chancellor believes that a delayed Brexit would be detrimental to many businesses in the UK.
The sooner we resolve this with a good outcome that reassures business that there will be a sensible way forward, a smooth exit process and a trading partnership with the European Union in the future, the fewer businesses and jobs we will lose. So the pressure's on.
Council leaders have decided to bring a revised Scottish Government pay offer to the teachers' union that could see teachers across Scotland get a 9% pay rise. A meeting was held in Edinburgh today after the government's previous offer was overwhelmingly rejected. The Educational Institute of Scotland are now in a position to ballot their members on whether to accept or reject the deal. Education Minister John Swinney said he hopes this will bring pay disputes to a conclusion. A climate change activist group staged a surprise demonstration inside the Scottish Parliament debating chamber this afternoon. The group, Extinction Rebellion Scotland, are calling on the Scottish Government to do more to tackle climate change. Activists initially refused to leave the Parliament, but eventually took their protest outside. Min Black, a spokesperson for the group, outlined their demands.
We have 3 demands as Extinction Rebellion Scotland. We want to we want the government to tell the truth and act as if the truth is real. We want to cut emissions to neutral, to zero, by 2025. And we want them to implement a citizens' assembly who will vote on this change and oversee this process.
And a man convicted in court for the possession and use of weapons has been banned from entering East Lothian for 2 years. Dylan Worrell, originally from Merseyside, was reported for offence in May 2017 and sentenced to 14 months imprisonment the following September. In anticipation of his release, officers from Musselburgh Community Investigation Unit have been granted an ASBO that will prevent Worrell from entering East Lothian until 2021. The decision has been made in order to protect civilians in the region.
Thanks for that, Luke. The former First Minister, Alex Salmond, appeared in court yesterday to face a number of charges, including attempted rape, all of which he strongly denies. Now released on bail, Salmond awaits confirmation of when his trial will begin. Our political reporter, Ellen Beaton, was at the Sheriff Court yesterday on a day when Scottish news went global.
Shame on you!
When former First Minister Alex Salmond arrived at the Edinburgh Sheriff Court yesterday afternoon to face multiple charges, including attempted rape, the news sent shockwaves that were felt far beyond the shores of Scottish politics. By 3:30pm, when Salmond exited the court on Chamber Street and barreled into his awaiting taxi, the story had gone global. The New York Times were already reporting, Scotland's First Minister is charged with attempted rape. Salmond is being charged with 14 offences, consisting of 9 counts of sexual assault, 2 counts of indecent assault, 1 count of breach of peace, and 2 counts of attempted rape. He made no plea during a short private hearing, but did tell a busy media scrum of both Scottish and international journalists that he was innocent of any criminality.
I refute absolutely these allegations of criminality, and I'll defend myself to the utmost in court.
The 64-year-old had been under a Police Scotland investigation since last September. On Wednesday night, he was arrested and voluntarily attended a police station in central Scotland. He was released after agreeing to appear in court on Thursday. In the immediate aftermath of Salmond's arrest being made public, First Minister Nicola Sturgeon told reporters that while she understood the news would be a shock to many, that it would be completely inappropriate for her to make any comments at this time. Salmond's appearance in court coincided with First Minister's questions, where Presiding Officer Ken McIntosh warned parliamentarians to be extremely careful to not discuss the matter as it was now sub judice.
Members will be aware of reports in the media this morning that the former First Minister, Alex Salmond, has been arrested. That means that the parliamentary rules on sub judice apply as this case is now active.
Because of the formerly active or live nature of the case, now that charges have been brought, there are very strict rules on what can and can't be reported beyond what was released by the Crown Office yesterday. The story was, however, on the front page of every Scottish newspaper this morning and was covered by major outlets in Italy, Spain, France and the United States. Salmond has said that while he wants to say more about his current situation, he would have to remain tight-lipped until proceedings began.
I've got great faith in the court system of Scotland. I've got recent cause to have great faith in the court system of Scotland. That is where I'll state my case.
Salmond was released on bail and his legal team will be scrutinising the detailed charges today. In a short email statement, the Crown Office has told EN4 News that it is unlikely that dates for Salmond's future court appearances will be announced anytime soon.
Thanks, Ellen. The Scottish Government has announced plans to finance a programme to support children and young people at risk of going missing. Nearly two-thirds of missing person investigations in Scotland involve young people, and the new scheme aims to educate this at-risk age group on the dangers of going missing. The programme has been awarded £30,000 funding by the government to tackle the issue from a preventative position. Eimear Harrison has been investigating. Eimear, what can you tell me about the extent of the issue in Scotland?
Well, Paul, as you said, nearly two-thirds, that's 64%, of all missing person investigations in Scotland involve young people. And actually, the Missing People Charity, one of two charities involved in the new programme, along with Barnardo Scotland, say that these figures are likely to be a significant underestimate. When we delve into these figures a little bit more, we find that only 1 in 20 young people who run away reach out for professional help. This is exactly what the programme is trying to combat, showing children that there is support out there for them and how to access these networks. Earlier today, I spoke with Missing Persons Operational Coordinator at Police Scotland, Joachim Bell, about this situation in the capital.
In Edinburgh, that's probably closer to 54%, to be honest. So we would split that into kind of two areas. That would be children who are looked after and accommodated, that being children who are in resident and children's units, either a close support unit or an open unit. And then we've also got children who are resident at home and go missing from the home address. Now, some of those children could also be looked after by the local authority, but they just might be resident at home. But the total for children, and that's under 18s, is 54% of our business. And that's of a total of just under 3,000 missing persons incidents that we dealt with last year here in Edinburgh.
Will Police Scotland have any involvement in the programme, including the consultation process and the implementation of the scheme?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have a memorandum of understanding with the charity Missing People. We also work closely with education, and we also have pretty strong links with Barnardo's. I actually spoke to one of the managers in Barnardo's that we work with just earlier on today about this particular subject. From my perspective as a missing persons coordinator for Edinburgh, I would very much want to be part of that, because ultimately it's if there's a package, an educational package, which is going to be tailored and created and delivered in the school environment and that could have an impact on missing people, then yeah, we would be working together on that, definitely, because we have strong links with Barnardo's.
How will this new programme assist Police Scotland in their missing persons investigations?
It will assist greatly, because I mean, we have the National Missing Persons Framework, which is a sort of Scottish Government document, which lays out very clearly the kind of three or four main sort of strands to dealing with missing people. And the most important, and the first one, is prevention. So, you know, if there's anything that's going to be done to help prevent people from going missing, then that's what really we're all about. It's bound to have an impact on the number of people who go missing. If we can raise the awareness of the risks involved when young people do go missing, of the kind of things that, the harm that can come to young children, either through being a victim of crime, a victim of child sexual exploitation, which is a really big one for us. I mean, we live in fear of that on an almost daily basis if that were to happen, and also just children forming bad associations, being exposed to drugs and alcohol. All these risks are heightened if a young person is going to go missing. So from a prevention perspective, then if we can raise awareness around that, then we would support that 100%.
That was Joachim Bell, Missing Persons Operational Coordinator at Police Scotland, speaking with Eimear Harrison. Now, the Black Arrow, Britain's only rocket to launch a satellite into orbit, went on display in Penicuik this afternoon after its trip back from the Australian desert after crash landing there in 1971, remaining abandoned for almost five decades. David Paul found out why this symbolic space artifact has been brought back after nearly 50 years.
Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3.
When you picture rockets going into space, America and Russia might be the first countries you think of. But you may not know, in the 1970s, the United Kingdom made its own attempt to reach the stars. The Black Arrow project was the UK's first successful attempt to propel a satellite into orbit. A real achievement in space exploration for Britain.
My name's Mike Taylor, and I'm part of the spaceflight programme in the UK Space Agency.
To find out more, Mr. Taylor told us a little of the history of Black Arrow.
So the Black Arrow project built upon Britain's first generation attempt at a nuclear deterrent and used the technology from that to try and create a really low-cost experimental satellite launch vehicle. There were three test launches. Two of those failed, but the third launch did take the satellite Prospero into orbit in 1971. The launch occurred after the programme had been cancelled.
After its job was done, Black Arrow sat for 48 years in its final resting place, the Australian outback. But now, Edinburgh-based space technology firm Skyrora has brought it back to be displayed in Penicuik today until a permanent home is found. The company's business development executive, Becky Morris, explained why they brought it back.
We had discovered that the R3 vehicle was in Australia, and it was kind of one of the long-term aims of the company. It was brought back in the summer last year. But the focus on it, I suppose, is it is the only successful British launch vehicle developed in Britain to put a satellite into orbit. And so since now there's this big push from the government and the UK Space Agency to become a launch nation again, we felt it was quite significant to bring it home because it's a really key part of British space heritage.
Black Arrow is a symbol of our space past, but what about its future? With Britain now looking forward, Mr. Taylor told us more about what's in store for the UK space industry.
Well, the programme of which I'm part aims to enable small satellite launch from the UK, as well as suborbital spaceflight for science and tourism purposes, so taking people to the edge of space. We're also trying to build the market through grant funding and other measures. For instance, we've given around £31.5 million worth of grants to a spaceport in the north of Scotland at Sutherland.
With the government's new investment and the launch station being built in the Scottish Highlands, you may just see a British rocket lifting off very soon.
Thanks to David Paul and to David Bowie. The date for banning non-recyclable plastic has been brought forward by the Scottish Government in an attempt to move closer towards implementing a deposit return scheme to fight plastic pollution. Tonight is a celebrated evening in Scotland with Burns Night upon us. Emily Hewitt explores Burns' life and some of the celebrations taking place over the weekend. And Paige Beresford will have the latest sports stories later in the programme. But first, First Minister Nicola Sturgeon and Prime Minister Theresa May met in London yesterday after clashing over a second Scottish independence vote. The two leaders are divided over Brexit, with Ms Sturgeon urging Mrs May to consider another referendum on the EU membership, something the Prime Minister opposes. It remains unclear what independence would mean for Scotland post-Brexit. Sebastian Falkstad and Constance Amdahl are here to explore Scotland's options.
That's right, we're back and better than ever. Last week, Seb and I tackled the UK's Brexit options, specifically the Norwegian Plus model, because, you know, we're Norwegians. But this week, we have officially moved on.
Thank God.
Today, we're going to take on Brexit impact on the possibility of a second independence referendum here in Scotland. Think of this as a sort of Indie Ref 2.0 chat for dummies.
I've actually been looking forward to this. Bring in the dummies.
No one's joining us, Seb.
Who's the dummy then?
Well, this is awkward.
Oh.
Anyway, 2 years on from the referendum, what Brexit will mean for the UK is still not clear to most people, and especially not to Seb.
Hey.
So let's just start from the very beginning. And the Scottish independence referendum back in 2014, 55% voted to remain a part of the UK, but then Brexit happened and everything got confusing. Exactly. So now Brexit is more unclear than ever after the crushing parliamentary defeat of the exit deal that Theresa May spent two whole years negotiating. The government are now battling between May's deal, no deal Brexit, and even the possibility of a second Brexit referendum, which Farage said...
Oh, I think that'd be the biggest Anglo-Saxon two fingers up you've ever seen in your life.
He paints with words.
Who knows what's going to happen, but let's just focus on Scotland because it's too complicated already. And would they and will they vote differently? So yesterday, Theresa May and Nicola Sturgeon met up and May said that the last thing we want is a second independence referendum. Very firm on that. But Sturgeon clapped back and said that the Prime Minister is simply running scared from the verdict of the Scottish people.
Barn.
Wasn't that great? The Scottish accent is getting on point. To really understand what this means for Scotland, I have asked you, Seb, to find the pros and cons of a second indie ref in the midst of this ugly divorce.
So the pros of Scottish independence are that Scots would get to control their oil. They wouldn't have to ask for England's opinion about foreign policy and would get to regulate their own governance. And they can also have referendums as often as they like. Mm. The cons of Scottish independence are that they would have to reapply for EU membership. They would have to create their own currency, which could be problematic if the rest of the UK don't agree to a currency union. And would also be less secure because they lose one of the best armed forces in the world and would have to recreate a small defence force of their own.
Wow, you managed to fit a lot on that wee post-it. Impressive. But what I really like to know is not what the politicians are saying, but what does the people of Scotland want, Seb?
I don't really know, but I'll go find out.
Seb?
I'm walking down Princes Street and the first thing I want to find out is, should there be a second independent referendum?
I think I would be quite happy with the second referendum, yeah.
It might be a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced either way.
I think it would be a very bad idea for two reasons. One, we had quite a clear vote a few years ago. And second, you know, the experience of this UK referendum was that it's been so divisive. And I think referendums are very divisive.
Well, I'm against it myself. We were told that it was a vote to decide it once and for all.
Thank you. Let's get back to the studio. Hi, Constance.
Hi, Seb.
I'm back.
I can see that. So, did speaking to the locals help you understand how they feel about the possibility of a second referendum?
No.
So you don't feel like you got a better overview?
No.
Care to explain?
I'm just as confused as ever.
It is confusing. Brexit is still so unclear. If there's even going to be a second independence referendum is certainly unclear. So it's what independence will look like post-Brexit. But with this segment for dummies, you at least now know more than Seb.
Thank you, Seb and Constance. The Scottish Government have brought the date of banning non-recyclable plastic forward from 2045 to 2030, moving even closer towards implementing a deposit return scheme to fight plastic pollution. The scheme will work towards a more circular economy, fighting to prevent bottles, containers and bags polluting our streets and oceans. Daisy Smith reports.
Hear that? That's the sound of single-use plastic bottles and bags being carelessly tossed in a waste bin. In today's throwaway culture, you may use that bottle for the duration of lunch, but it will live on in the ocean for up to 450 years, if it doesn't end up in the belly of a sea creature, that is. The Scottish Government have brought the date of banning non-recyclable plastic forward to 2030 from 2042. Yesterday, Environmental Secretary Rosanna Cunningham reiterated the Scottish Government's pledge to implement a deposit return scheme. Katie Forbes, Labour MSP, said,
"Deposit return scheme is a means by which people who are using plastic bottles or glass bottles can actually recycle them far more easily, and it puts an incentive on. So in other countries where it operates, you might get 10 pence, 50 pence, 5 pence back for every bottle that you recycle."
The scheme could see drink containers recycled back into items for the food and drink industry. It will also be an effective way of increasing recycling rates, reducing litter, and could also be an opportunity to secure a new source of sustainable, high-quality material and creating jobs in the process. So we went to find out what is being done and what needs to be done as part of a circular economy. Laura Blair of environmental organisation ChangeWorks said,
"What we really need to do is provide people with solutions so that they can start to take that interest and newfound kind of awareness of the problems and actually start to make changes in their daily lives. And so I think anything that can help people identify those solutions and make it as easy for people as possible to start making those changes, I think that will be absolutely crucial. But there's certainly much more interest in this area than there has been at any other time, I think so."
Using and disposing of single-use plastic have an impact on the world's land, air and water. Dolphins, ducks and whales are living in danger as we continually throw away bottles, can holders, bags and coffee lids into their homes. Catherine Gemmell, an author of the Marine Conservation Society, said,
"Some of these shocking images of clownfish
fish using plastic bottles to lay their eggs, of turtles with straws getting stuck up their nose, of, you know, amazing birds like albatross feeding their chicks plastic as well. And this is because single-use plastic itself as an item can provide a huge devastating impact on wildlife.
Scotland is making quick moves in developing the deposit return scheme, and Zero Waste Scotland are working on the design for the campaign. Previously, the government initiative of charging 5 pence for bags reduced the amount of plastic bags found in Scotland's surrounding seas by 40%. It is hoped that the deposit scheme will have a similar impact. If change is not made, it is estimated that by 2050 there will be more plastic than fish in the sea. It's certainly something to consider next time you spend money on a plastic container, because the effects on the environment could be even more costly.
Thanks, Daisy. Now Paige Beresford is here with the latest sports news.
Now, the latest sport highlights on Radio Energy.
Highly respected sports journalist Hugh McIlvery has died aged 84. Mr. McIlvery worked for The Observer and then The Sunday Times for 23 years before he retired in 2016. Over the course of his career, he covered some of the biggest sporting events in his time, including the 1974 boxing match between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman, which would go on to be known as the Rumble in the Jungle, and England's World Cup triumph in 1966. In his 60 years as a journalist, Mr. McIlvery was acknowledged for his coverage in boxing and in Scottish football, and has a place in both respected Hall of Fames. Gary Lineker described Mr. McIlvery as truly one of the greatest sports writers of all time. In Scottish football, Hibernian boss Neil Lennon has admitted he fears Ryan Porteous could be out of action for a while after the defender suffered a recurrence of a knee injury. Porteous limped out of Fir Park after half an hour in the 1-0 defeat to Motherwell. Lennon has said losing another defender is another disappointment for the club.
It's just another blow. This month now we've lost our three best players. We need an injection of freshness and quality. We need to do some hard work and we need to get up and running and start challenging for the top six.
The date for Edinburgh's Rugby European Championship Cup quarter-final match has been confirmed. The capital club will play Munster on Saturday, 30th of March, with a kick-off scheduled for 12:45 at Murrayfield. Glasgow's Warriors quarter-final encounter away to Sakharins will follow Edinburgh's match on the Saturday, with that match scheduled to take place at 3:15. In tennis, Novak Djokovic made an impressive statement by beating Lucas Pouet in just over 1 hour and 23 minutes at the Australian Open semi-final today. He won in straight sets 6-0, 6-2 and 6-2. He will now face Rafael Nadal's final on Sunday, and this will be the eighth time the pair have faced each other in a slam final. Back to Paul for the rest of the news, weather and travel.
Thanks for that, Paige. Now finally, tonight is a celebrated evening in Scotland, with Burns Night upon us. The life of Robert Burns and his poetry are celebrated every year, with events that are held across Edinburgh and beyond, bringing people together to share haggis, neeps and tatties, and maybe the odd nip of whiskey. Emily Hewitt explores Burns' life and some of the celebrations taking place over the weekend.
A tune known to many people around the world, a group at the Scottish Storytelling Centre sing the lyrics of Auld Lang Syne, written by Scottish poet Robert Burns. Today is the annual celebration of his birth, Burns Night, which brings people together, enjoying the traditional meal of haggis, neeps and tatties, not forgetting a dance around the room to the sound of a ceilidh band. Put these two together with a wee dram of whiskey and you'll have yourself a braw evening. Robert Burns was born on this day in 1759 in Ayrshire. He grew up on a farm that he took over at a young age after his father's death. Despite having financial struggles in the family, he was lucky enough to get a good education, which helped spark his interest in literature. I spoke to Dr. Robert Irvine, Senior Lecturer of English at Edinburgh University.
As a young man, he started writing his own verse, very often satires on local characters in the area. These were very popular among his friends, and Burns decided to publish a book containing these poems, which he published in Kilmarnock in 1786. And this was a huge success, and for Burns, this was his way out of the constant struggle and insecurity of farming.
It has been over 200 years since his death, but the memory of Robert Burns and his work is still very much alive.
It
My name is Colin Waters and I am the Communications Manager at the Scottish Poetry Library, which is the world's leading resource for Scottish poetry.
Colin explained why Burns poetry is still so prevalent in the modern world.
I think we as a nation are very attracted to what you might call the message of Burns's poetry, which is a very egalitarian sentiment, and that idea of liberty, equality and fraternity, I think it still resonates for Scots today. We like to think of ourselves as a welcoming nation.
He told us why he favours the famous A Man's a Man above the romantic pieces.
So let us pray that come it may and come it will for all that sense and worth o'er the earth shall bear the grief for all that. For all that and all that, it's coming yet for all that man to man the world o'er shall brothers be for all that. I think that line, that last line, is so moving, especially when you consider what's going on in the world today.
Along with the usual Burns traditions, this year Edinburgh sees the start of a new annual festival, toasting all things Burns.
So we're sitting here in St Giles Cathedral in front of the moon, a 7-metre full moon hanging from the ceiling at St Giles Cathedral, and this is here all week.
Burns and Beyond, a week-long event across Edinburgh, showcases the poet's firm place in Scottish culture through music, comedy and exhibits. I visited Edinburgh's St Giles Cathedral to speak to Francis Sutton, the press manager for the festival.
The reason to put this here is to give a focal point for the whole festival. It's not specifically Burns, but if you look at Burns' poetry, there are 10, 20 of his poems and songs that reference the moon. It was obviously, for all poets, it's something incredibly important. And we wanted a focal point for the festival. I think it's something we'll carry on. And what's interesting is if you travel abroad, the Scots get more Scottish the further from Scotland they go. So the Burns Societies in America, in Canada, in Hong Kong, in Australia, everywhere there is a Scottish diaspora, there is a Burns Society, there is a Burns Night. This is not going away.
So no matter where Scots are in the world, there's no escaping the excitement of Burns Night.
There's not. Thanks for that, Emily.
Now, the weather on Radio Energy.
Tonight will remain cloudy, but there is a chance of rain, and it will remain fairly mild with temperatures staying at 9 degrees Celsius. There is very slow traffic on Crammond Road South both ways due to temporary traffic lights. All major routes are expected to get busy as the rush hour begins in the next hour. And a recap of today's programmes. The Scottish Government has announced plans to finance a programme to support children and young people at risk of going missing. The Black Arrow, Britain's only rocket launched a satellite into orbit, is on display at Penicuik after its trip back from the Australian desert. And the life of Robert Burns and his poetry will be celebrated by Scots across the capital and the world tonight. For more on all the stories today, visit us at en4news.com. I'm Paul Sinclair. Thanks for joining us and have a great evening.
If it's talk, tunes, tales and talent you're after, you've come to the right place. Radio Energy.